and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. Escalating tensions at Chicago Public Schools as the CEO rejects the mayor's request that he resign. Our Spotlight Politics team has the latest. Scammers targeting elderly residents out of tens of thousands of dollars. What you should know.
Your alderperson works with their 49 colleagues to set policy on big citywide issues like public safety.
And what would you say you do here? WTTW News explains what exactly a Chicago alderperson does. And now to some of today's top stories. In a startling show of public defiance towards the mayor, Chicago Public School CEO Pedro Martinez says he's refusing the mayor's request to resign. In a Chicago Tribune column, Martinez writes he's not resigning because it would, quote, risk creating a leadership vacuum and instability for the district. And today, Martinez is pushing school board members for a resolution to prohibit school closures until 2027. This after the CEO came under fire for compiling a list of schools that could be closed as part of an effort to develop the district's five-year strategic plan. In a letter sent to staff, Martinez says, quote, there are absolutely no plans to close, consolidate, or phase out any district-managed schools. This simply is not a direction that CPS is considering as we plan for the future of our district. Any CEO thinking about closing schools could never do it alone. Any school closure or consolidation would need to be approved by the Board of Education and would involve extensive engagement with the school community. We'll have much more on this in our Spotlight Politics coming up. Allegations of widespread sexual abuse of children held in Illinois and Cook County youth detention centers are growing. Three new lawsuits allege more than 200 people were sexually and physically abused as children from 1996 to 2021 by corrections officers, nurses, kitchen staff, chaplains, and others.
As these cases are filed, as more people come forward, there are more abusers being identified by multiple victims independently, and those accounts really corroborate each other and should be of great concern to both the state and Cook County.
These new plaintiffs bring the total to 667 people who've alleged this abuse since lawsuits were first filed in May. They're part of a wave of complaints across the U.S., including in Pennsylvania, California, New York, and others. Though attorneys say Illinois stands out for its magnitude of the problem, Cook County and Illinois officials declined to comment.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
The city's cost of caring for migrants this year wasn't as high as projected, about $9 million less since an expected surge of new arrivals never arrived. When approving last year's budget, City Council earmarked $150 million to feed, house, and care for migrants entering the country legally after requesting asylum. Instead, the city expects to spend less than $141 million. Additionally, the city expects to save another $16 million by closing three shelters by the end of October. Up next, scams targeting elderly residents. What you should know right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
City officials and community groups are alerting neighbors of a crime targeting elderly Chinese women. At least five residents have been victims of the so-called blessing scams. Officials say the victims have been scammed out of tens of thousands of dollars and the perpetrators have yet to be identified. Joining us are Grace Chan McKibben, Executive Director of the Coalition for a Better Chinese American Community, and 11th Ward Alderwoman Nicole Lee. Thanks to you both for joining us. Grace, let's start with you, please. Explain what the scams are for us, so-called blessing scams.
Yeah, the scams work roughly the same. Elderly person, an elderly woman, is either waiting at the bus stop or walking on the street, and she encounters a middle-aged woman who speaks Cantonese and asks for directions to a miracle doctor. So I've heard about a miracle doctor who can perform miracles and cure all kinds of illnesses, and they are around here. You look like a nice person. Can you help me find them? And then they get into a conversation, and the older woman typically would walk with the younger woman for some time, and then they would come upon what seems to be another person that is just chance to come upon another woman who said, oh, you know, I've heard of this doctor before, and my family, my mother, my relative had been cured by this person. And then they got into more conversation, and then there sometimes it's a third person involved, sometimes isn't. The third woman would also corroborate the story. And then what ended up happening is that they would talk to this doctor on the phone, who then, and the women would convince the older person that somebody that's dear to them, a child, a grandchild, is in grave danger, and that she needed to,
she needs a blessing, a miracle,
and the miracle involves putting money and jewelry.
Jewels, family heirlooms in a bag.
And then the woman, the victim usually ends up with a bottle of miracle water and loses her belongings.
Right, and somewhere during like the prayer or the so-called blessing over the bag of goods and money, they've swapped out that bag. Don't open it for a few more days, correct? Right. And then, of course, by the time she looks into it. Tell me a little bit about how, why, you know, this group of women is being targeted and how the scammers are able to sort of gain their trust and their confidence.
Yeah, I think they probably are just out on the street looking for people that are by themselves. All the victims are older people that are either coming, going to the grocery store, coming back from the grocery store. In one case, the victim was actually coming back from having received food at a food pantry. So basically, they're just looking for people that may be by themselves, older, possibly more trusting and more vulnerable.
And they're also trusting. Some of it is cultural to trust the sort of a younger person to help you out with something. Not even cultural. I think older people everywhere trust younger people to help.
I think older people everywhere is looking for folks that they can talk to. Sometimes they're lonely. And then also that they then start having a conversation. And there's always a bit of time. They would ride the bus together or walk together. And during this time, the perpetrators gain trust by asking about the victim's family and where they're from, what family members they have, and so on, and in so doing gained also more information about them.
Alderwoman, how have you and your office responded to the aftermath of this?
So we first heard about it from Grace and her staff, and we absolutely asked if they filed a police report. That's always our first question. We encourage everybody to file police reports so that we can collect the data and the police can begin to sense trends. So we've been working with the 9th District Police as well as the Financial Crimes Unit. A detective is working on the case and actively investigating it. So, you know, we've helped to put people in touch with folks within the Chinatown Neighborhood Watch Network who have access to cameras. That's how we were able to get some still photos as well as a license plate to hand over to the police as evidence.
Based on that, is there anything that we know about the perpetrators yet?
They were savvy enough to know to wear hats and wear, N95 masks.
Disguise their
They were
identity.
Disguising their identity. So it's been difficult to identify the women. Police have been asking if anybody witnessed any of these crimes going on, and maybe they would have seen something that might be helpful. So, there's an open call out to the community for anybody with information or additional video footage to send it over to the police.
Grace, this has happened in Chinatowns, other Chinatowns in other cities across the country and even internationally. What do we know about those?
Yeah, we have heard. So the first person that came to us came in the middle of August after she had already reported to police. So her reasoning is so that we can share out in on WeChat, on the Chinese social media, so that other people would not fall for the same scam. And then we had since heard from people from other Chinatowns, as well as we heard from a freelance reporter who works with BBC that there may be cases that are similar in London's Chinatown, too.
Alderwoman, is there anything that can be done to help the victims? Or are their money and possessions, in some cases, family heirlooms, are they just gone?
Unfortunately, I think right now they're just gone. I know the police are actively working to investigate the case. Look, we know that the first reported case of this happened in May, and there was not another reported case until August. We suspect that there's probably other victims out there who just aren't talking about it. You know, so there's a request out to the community at this point to ask if anybody else fell victim to the same group of scammers, so that we can continue to build a case against them. I think more than anything, the best thing that we can do for the community at this point is to raise awareness for these scammers in particular, though we haven't had another reported case since the end of August. But scams in general, you know, there are so many different ways that people are trying to scam people, especially the elderly who are fairly vulnerable, as we were speaking about earlier.
Are the victims, or is there a chance that they are eligible for the Victims Assistance Fund?
That I'm not familiar with.
Okay.
So I'm not sure that there's anything that they'd be able to recover. I don't know how many of them actually had, like, homeowners insurance or anything like that. Most of these seniors, I think, were living in senior buildings or, like, renting apartments. So I highly doubt that they had insurance to cover some of these losses, unfortunately.
Grace, how do we prevent scams like this from happening in about 30 seconds?
Yeah, I think that if you have an older person in, you know, in your neighborhood or older relative, older friends, please just look out for them. I think we've been sharing a lot about, you know, avoiding phone and text scams, but also avoid, you know, scams if you talk to a person. I think sometimes
Stranger.
People are less on guard when they talk to a real person.
Right, right. Okay. Alderwoman Nicole Lee, Grace Jamin-Kibben, thanks to you both for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And up next, our Spotlight Politics team has the latest on a moratorium on school closures and much more. Pressure on the Chicago Public Schools leader grows. Meanwhile, the city says it expects to spend less on migrants than it originally thought. And the once powerful Alderman Ed Burke is now a federal inmate. Here with all that and more is our Spotlight Politics team, Amanda Vinicky, Heather Sharone, and Nick Blumberg. Whew. Have you...
Pretty much.
Exactly, right? Yeah. There. Have we caught our breath? Because this afternoon, the drama at CPS has been escalating. Statements and op-eds are just flying left and right. Sunday, we know that the teachers' union announced that it took a vote of no confidence on CPS CEO Pedro Martinez at its House of Delegates meeting last week. We talked to Stacey Davis-Gates from the CTU about it last night. Heather, what is the latest?
Well, we learned officially today that Mayor Brandon Johnson did ask CPS CEO Pedro Martinez to resign. Martinez declined. He said in the Tribune op-ed you referenced that he did so out of the best interests of Chicago students, saying that it would be disruptive to change CEOs at this point. Of course, we're in the middle of CTU contract negotiations. The district just approved a new 5-year strategic plan. It was a stunning public just defiance of the mayor. And really now it means that the ball is in the court of the Chicago Board of Education, which all of those members were appointed by Mayor Brandon Johnson, who now have the authority to terminate Martinez. Now, if they do, and they do so for cause, Martinez would be dismissed immediately. But if they say there's no cause, he will be paid for the next 6 months to oversee a transition to the next CPS CEO. However, this is a lot of chaos in a district that not only needs a new contract with its teachers, but is also facing a $700 million deficit next year, and also has so far refused to pay $175 million into its pension funds, which of course I think is part of what precipitated this crisis, along with a raging debate over whether they should close schools that are underutilized.
Well, and let's add to that instability, perhaps with a changing CEO, but also a new school board coming in, because only half of the members going forward after the election, or starting the new year anyway, will be appointed by the mayor, and the other half are going to be elected and could have very different viewpoints from the mayor. Johnson will still have control because the citywide president of the school board will be still his appointee until another couple of years. But there's just a lot of turmoil, which is one of the reasons that CEO Martinez says he should keep his job, that it is too much, that you've already had seven CEOs in the past decade, and that that is not good for the school system and its students, particularly as you have a new vision that was unanimously supported by a school board that he helped to draft in advance.
Well, and I thought it was interesting, too, to see that statement from the Chicago Board of Education talking about this list of potential co-locations, school closures that we heard Stacey Davis Gates talking about, that other folks have raised. Clearly, this seems to be, you know, from all the reporting, a huge part of what contributed to souring the relationship between Mayor Johnson and CEO Martinez. The board coming out with a very strong declaration there that this was something we were discussing in closed session. We have a responsibility to look into all the options. It doesn't mean we were going to pursue it. You know, I think there's maybe some questions about, was this something they were trying to do on the sly, because school closures are such a third rail in Chicago, understandably. But it's going to be very interesting to see whether there is any way to mend that relationship. And while the board, you know, has come out and said, this has been, you know, misinformation, this isn't what's going on, will the mayor sway his appointees ultimately to, you know, oust Martinez?
And I think there are questions, Nick. Is it that this list of school closures was something that was, as you noted, the board was earnestly doing and meant to keep in close confidence, and that anybody in Chicago politics knows and recognizes that that is part of its duty, its fiduciary responsibilities? And is it being used as a political wedge, because there had very much already been hard feelings prior to this coming out between the Chicago Teachers Union and the fifth floor of City Hall? So I think one could question, do they earnestly think that Pedro Martinez and the board are trying to close schools, particularly now that they've got a moratorium on Thursday's agenda? Or is this another way that can be used to sort of rile up the membership?
It's a very interesting dynamic as well. There used to be a time when it was very clearly CPS, the board, and the mayor on one side, and CTU on the other side. And there's a very different dynamic now. We know that CTU and Mayor Brandon Johnson are typically aligned. Stacey Davis Gates last night said that the board is as well, and that it is Pedro Martinez who's not on the same page with everyone else. But I'm not sure that's the case based on the statement that we got today from the board saying that, no, we are not closing schools and we are not taking up Pedro Martinez's contract anytime soon yet.
Well, and add to that the fact that, you know, we do have these school board elections coming up in which the CTU is understandably very heavily involved. So that adds another layer on top of it, you know, sort of the political complexity of having this first round of elections where they have candidates who they would like to see, you know, take their place on the board.
So would.
It's just one more complication in an already really, really complicated story.
What are you talking about? Because here's a little bit of what Chicago Teachers Union leader Stacey Davis Gates told me yesterday about Pedro Martinez on Chicago Tonight.
Pedro Martinez has to do two things. He has to get in line with his Board of Education, with his boss, the mayor, and with the workers who make the district go. And he needs to create a vision and a plan for how we win the revenue and the funding to offer students what they deserve. Offering them cuts only is not the vision we have for this district, and our union will not go backwards.
So I guess my question then is, who is this most damaging for?
I think it depends on how it all shakes out, really. I mean, Pedro Martinez, of course, if he loses his job, he says that it is one that he wants to keep. Would it be the taxpayers that are at a loss if, in fact, he ends up getting paid for half of a year that maybe he's not all that involved?
In a tight budget year.
Is it the mayor if the school board members that he appointed don't go along with him and that it is seen
and
as a loss of political power? Exactly. I mean, so I really think that that's hard to answer at this point, and you're really seeing so many people come to the fore. They're speaking out. It's driving a further wedge, potentially, between black elected officials and Latino elected officials. You've had a coalition of Latino leaders in Chicago saying, well, hey, wait,
and meanwhile,
please protect Pedro Martinez.
Families, parents of students at home going, what's happening? And I think a lot of folks would say they're probably the biggest loser in all this, which is unfortunate because the district is here for the students.
And all sides would say we're fighting for those very students. Right. So that would be the case.
Let's hope that is the case, right? So, Heather, after convincing city council to earmark an additional, $70 million. Thank you for migrant care. 5 months ago, city officials saying, we don't need that money after all. How much are we talking about? $70
million. So that was a huge fight in April. Speaking of big fights, that was politically damaging to the mayor. He had to ask black alder people once again, dig into the city's pockets and care for these newest Chicagoans at a time where they see black communities suffering just under decades of disinvestments. And with mostly because of the changes made by President Joe Biden at the border, it means that that money was never really needed at all. And in fact, the city included $150 million in the city's 2024 budget. The city expects to spend only $141 million of that money, in part because the state and the county and the federal government kicked in some extra cash, but also nowhere near the surge that everybody was expected to be timed with the Democratic National Convention arrived, which means that that was political capital expended for no good reason.
But money saved.
Right.
Well, had things gone otherwise,
sure.
Of course. I mean,
yes.
I think this was not necessarily a waste of political capital in the sense that had things gone differently, had you seen a surge and Chicago was ill-prepared for it, that would have been true trouble for the city, for the migrants,
oh,
and for
Johnson's
political
future. Oh, there's no doubt there was no choice but to appropriate that money. But in retrospect, you sure would have liked to avoid having that fight
that happened in city council. Real quick, because we only got 30 seconds left. Ed Burke, Nick, go.
Well, Ed Burke is one of the newest federal inmates. You know, I think a lot of folks see this as, you know, there were people that made a real push saying he should not be getting anywhere near the 10 years that prosecutors wanted. We saw that avalanche of support from an array of folks. Whether or not that had a significant impact on the judge's sentencing, he sentenced to 2 years. He'll serve about 20 months. It's a pretty stunning downfall for the one-time head man in charge of the city council.
All right, we're going to leave it on Ed Burke, guys. That's Spotlight Politics.
We let you land at the tuna.
Thank you. Amanda Vinicky, Heather Cerrone, Nick Blumberg, that's Spotlight. And if you're looking for more context on the complicated issues that matter most to you, sign up for our email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan. You can do that at WTTW.com/newsletter. We're back with more right after this. Former Chicago Alderman Ed Burke reported to federal prison this week in Thompson, Illinois, about 150 miles west of here. He'll begin serving his 2-year prison sentence after being convicted on corruption charges. Burke joins dozens of previous alder people who've also ended up in prison. But certainly not all alder people are criminals. So just what does an alder person actually do? Heather Cerrone tells us in the latest edition of WTTW News Explains.
Every 4 years, residents of Chicago's 50 wards pick their representatives on the city council, officially known as alder people. They earn between $115,000 and $150,000 a year. Not too shabby for a job that comes with instant fame and allows for nearly unlimited side hustles. But what exactly does an alder person do? Their official job can be divided into two big buckets: citywide duties and ward services. Your alderperson works with their 49 colleagues to set policy on big citywide issues like public safety, housing, and transportation. They also decide whether to raise or lower taxes and how to spend those bucks by passing a budget, which they negotiate with the mayor, who isn't a member of the city council but presides over its meetings. The mayor gets to pick who serves as chairs of the city council's nearly two dozen committees.
those alder people have some real power and get to decide which ordinances and resolutions get a piece of the City Hall spotlight and stand a chance of becoming law. Life outside City Hall can be much less glamorous. Alder people are in charge of providing direct city services to the nearly 50,000 people in their ward. That's about the population of a well-sized suburb. And unfortunately for them, those 50,000 Chicagoans want that pothole filled now, and a new garbage cart now. And they want that tree in the parkway trimmed, you guessed it, now. But in return for dealing with the nitty-gritty details of city government, Alder people are free to function like mini mayors of their small part of the city under a decades-old tradition known as aldermanic prerogative. Fueled by the deference of the other members of the city council, each alder person gets to decide much of what should and should not happen in their ward. That means if, for example, you want to open a unique, super niche specialty cafe, you best get the local alder person on board before you slap the first coat of paint on the walls. While many alder people are dedicated public servants, more than a few have let that nearly unchecked power go to their heads and ended up becoming the mini mayor of a much smaller piece of real estate, a prison cell. And if you think it's hard to get that pothole filled with your alder person busy serving the community, you'll find that it's a lot harder when they're serving time.
Luckily, most of them don't go to jail. You can catch more of our Emmy Award-winning series, WTTW News Explains, on our website. That's at WTTW.com/news. And that's our show for this Tuesday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. A wrongful conviction and 10 years in prison leads to a record jury award. Marcel Brown shares his story with us. And a Chicago artist honors house music in a new mural outside a local library. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to give back to its community in Chicago and beyond.